It is 50 degrees, 610 in the Twin Cities on actually a really very pleasant evening right now. If you've seen video from what it was like earlier today, this morning in our southern part of the state and actually sort of around in pockets, unbelievable. It did snow in many parts of the state, especially in the south. Much of that snow pretty much gone, though, thankfully. But remarkable to think of that, hey, we're almost hitting May and we're still getting hit with some of that white stuff. Well, a lot ahead on this show for this evening. Coming up this hour, we are going to talk about distracted driving. There's that new law coming into effect very soon. In just a few months, we're going to talk about that, what you need to know and how people are looking out and how these laws are being enforced now and how they will be enforced in the future. And then also we're going to talk about the risk of skin cancer, what you don't know, what you need to know. And a lot ahead here. I'll be on till 9 o'clock, so please keep it right here at News Talk 830. But we do want to start this hour with talking about distracted driving. We do know that we've got a new law that's going into effect in August that says you cannot use your cell phone, you cannot have it in your hand as you are driving, even for navigation purposes. It's going to be out. But still, there are laws right now about distracted driving, and they are being enforced right now. And I don't know if you heard or saw some of the coverage, but they're out looking in very creative ways for you. Mike Hansen is the Director of Office of Traffic Safety at the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, and he is joining us right now. Mike, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing just great, Esme, and I am enjoying a bit of this nice evening outside.
Yeah, it is great, and I certainly I hope that our folks, our friends to the south, are getting some relief because they deserve it after kind of getting blindsided this morning with some of the white stuff. But hopefully, it is all melted by now. But let me ask you, Mike, in your view, how big a problem is distracted driving?
It's huge, Esme. I hate to overuse the word, but epidemic really does fit what law enforcement and what everybody else is seeing on the road. All you have to do if you spend any time on the road at all, assuming you're not the driver, is just take a look at what's going on around you. You know, I make a daily commute from the West Metro to St. Paul every day, and it's not unusual for me to see literally a dozen instances of distracted driving. Usually as a result of an electronic device, but not always, as I make that drive back and forth morning and afternoon. It's a huge problem. And, you know, it's a product of where we are in the relationship with our electronic devices. And many of our generations out there now have grown up with these, and the interaction that we have with them, it's very difficult for us to separate that. But it's also extremely distracting, which is a huge public safety issue.
Right. So what are the kinds of things that you see on your commute? I'm guessing they're pretty much things that I might see or that anybody out there listening would see.
Well, it's really anything you can imagine. Distractions, it runs the gamut of everything from putting on makeup, brushing your teeth, eating cereal or anything else, to reading a book, reading the newspaper, and then, of course, interacting with an electronic device. That's the most common thing that we're seeing out there. And then what are people doing on those electronic devices? Anything you can think of, from Snapchatting to Facebook to watching movies to watching episodes of Law and Order.
That's just unbelievable to me. I mean, I have to say that I am guilty. When the phone rings, do I pick it up? Yes, I do. And I know that I'm glad the law is changing, because I think we'll all hopefully change our habits. But it's mind blowing to me that somebody could be on Facebook or watching a TV show.
Oh, exactly. But again, a lot of the younger generations, and they've just grown up so connected that they look at drive time as an opportunity to reconnect with that thing. But drive time is not downtime. It's not catch up time. It's time to pay attention. And your experience, when that phone buzzes or when it rings, it triggers an actual biological response in our human body. Because of what we know will come if we answer that phone or look at that text, It creates a natural high for us. And so this is an addiction almost. And that's how we have to look at this. So enforcement certainly is going to be a huge part of this. Right. But enforcement is not going to solve this problem. It's got to be education, and it's got to be everybody making the effort to make that good decision behind the wheel, to pay attention to what's important now. And that's that driving task.
Right. Well, you know, and I've heard, I mean, let's talk about the enforcement right now, because I know you've done some creative ways of trying to get at this. And I've heard Colonel Langer, who's the head of the State Patrol, testify a number of times about really how difficult this has been for law enforcement, because you've got somebody who's got one of these devices and they get pulled over and they say, oh, no, I wasn't texting. I was just speaking on the phone, which is still legal. And that's been very difficult. How have you dealt with the current law? How are you continuing to deal with it? Are you stepping things up because the law is about to change? And obviously, I think more people are out and about in the summer months.
Exactly. And Colonel Langer, he testifies and addresses this topic in a wonderful way. And he's right. Under the current law, certainly texting is prohibited, as is web browsing and doing a lot of the things that people tend to do with their phones. However, the law also does not address people scrolling, looking for a phone number or looking for directions or something like that. So what the law that goes into effect August 1st will do, it's a very simple law for law enforcement to enforce. It's a very simple law for the public to understand, and that's the beauty of the language that came out of this process. You just can't have the phone in your hand, period. You can still talk, you can still text, and use your navigation functions. You just need to use a single touch or voice-activated command. You just cannot have that phone in your hand. What we're doing is we're eliminating one of the three distraction functions that occur when we have that phone in our hand, and that's the mechanical or the physical distraction. When we look at driving, we look really at three things that are affected that distract us. A visual distraction, so if we have to look at that phone, it is going to visually distract us from paying attention to what's going on the road in front of us. The mechanical or physical distraction, because you're actually handling that phone or interacting with it, that's another part of it. But then the cognitive distraction, because you have to think about what is going on with that electronic device or the communication you're attempting to have, and that takes your brain away from thinking about that driving task. And so I call that the trifecta of distraction. And so we're going to take that mechanical one off the table. So hands-free does not mean distraction-free, but it eliminates one form of distraction that we as humans have to deal with.
And I want to get to that new law in just a second. I know that, like, for instance, this past week, you were actually had people on buses looking down at people. I guess it's a lot easier to see exactly what people are doing when you're looking down, when you have a height advantage.
Exactly. We partner not only with the State Patrol, but with over 300 agencies across the state in a variety of traffic safety enforcement initiatives. And April being Distracted Driving Month, that's what we are currently looking at. And by putting officers in a position to have that visual advantage, it eliminates that debate that takes place at the roadside, or I was only looking for a phone number, or I was looking at my GPS, or something like that. The officers are actually in a position to watch them manipulate that phone, to use their thumb or whatever they're doing to type into it or enter data, things like that. So it just makes it a much more effective way to do it. But you know, unfortunately, law enforcement has had to adapt and become creative in those ways, but we shouldn't have to do it. Driving is a cooperative venture. We have to work together to make our transportation system work efficiently and safely. And quite honestly, when we make that decision that whatever is going on with that electronic device is more important than traffic safety, we are being selfish and we are not being respectful to the other folks who are sharing the road with us at that time.
All right. Mike Hansen is the Director of Office of Traffic Safety from the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. We're talking about distracted driving, about the new law that is to come. Mike, we got to take a quick break, but I do have a few more questions for you. If you can just hang on for just a minute, we'll have more with Mike after this. You are listening to News Talk A3L. It is 6:22. Esme Murphy, along with producer Devin Marshall. We are chatting with Mike Hansen. He is the director of the Office of Traffic Safety, the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. We're talking about distracted driving, the new law that's going into effect on August 1st that will not allow you to be driving a car and holding a cell phone in your hand at the same time. Doesn't matter if you are trying to talk on the phone, look at it for directions, text or whatever. It's all going to be a big no. Mike, you know, you mentioned earlier that you know, it was a lot of, you know, young people certainly have grown up just completely attached to their phone. But I've been struck by some of the coverage and some of the stories I've seen where people have been sentenced, where there have been horrific accidents and even deaths, where it's somebody who's older who is just a regular person who has committed this distracted driving offense that's ended up severely injuring or even, you know, God forbid, killing somebody. And my thought is, you know, this is not a bad person that's done this, but somehow they've done something that is so devastating. And I'm not sure that people are thinking about that when they do this.
You're exactly right, Esme. Nobody sets out to cause a horrific crash when they pull out of their driveway or pull out of their workplace or when they get on the highway. But they become a victim of their habits. And if their habits include, you know, being distracted behind the wheel because of their interactions with that electronic device, the consequences can and far too often are tragic, but they're completely preventable. If we look at, you know, five-year statistics, on average, over 50 people a year die in crashes in Minnesota because of distracted driving. And so that's why we are working very closely with our law enforcement partners and all of our educational partners to get the word out that this it is an issue, and it's one that all Minnesota has to work together to solve. And if Minnesota follows suit with other states who have passed similar legislation, that's 50 funerals that won't happen in a year.
Right.
That's 50 families that will not receive a death notification from a trooper, from an officer, or a deputy, and have the worst day that they could ever imagine because a family member is not coming home anymore. And so that's really what's driving this. It's a public safety issue, and it's going to take all of us working on this to solve it.
You know, in terms of, you know, what I was saying before, you know, and troopers and law enforcement officials that I've talked to say, you know, really somebody who is driving distracted is as dangerous as a drunk driver and somebody who would never think of having four drinks and getting behind the wheel can be a distracted driver.
And there's a number of studies out there that tend to support that correlation. Again, if we look at what alcohol does to us and our decision-making ability as a human being, some of the effects are similar to what happens when we're distracted. But it really comes down to that behavior that somebody engages in when they get behind the wheel and the choices that they make that put them behind the wheel or that they make while they are driving. And so that's really what it comes down to, is making those good, solid choices. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, you know, the law is very simple. It's easy for law enforcement to understand. It's easy for Minnesota drivers to understand. Anybody who's got questions can go to handsfreemn.org, and we've got frequently asked questions and options for folks who are looking for, you know, how do I start to make this transition? And that's the other part of our messaging is, don't wait for August 1st to figure out what your hands-free option is. Make that choice right now, today,
right,
and change your behavior, and we will have safer roads because of it.
And some of us, I mean, I recently purchased a car, and it's, you know, it's a new car, and it's, you know, it's got the hands-free thing and like that. That's great. Our other cars are older, and so I guess what we're looking at here is one of those devices that attaches to the windshield. You put your phone on it, and then you can either use Siri or else you can program the directions before you leave. You're allowed under the new law, right, to touch the phone once?
Yes, single touch or voice activation. And, you know, you've made a couple good points there. We always encourage people, if you're going to use a navigation function, which many, many people do, is to set that navigation function before you depart on your trip. And that way you don't have to interact with that navigation device while you're on the road. And that will, same thing with podcasts, or if you're into a music streaming provider, things like that, is if you set those ahead of time, that makes all the difference in the world. You can just concentrate on the driving task.
Right. And even those, you know, and they do make those units that you attach on. I'm going to have to go and start looking for a couple of those. But even with those newer cars, I mean, I don't really drive it a lot. And I do love, you know, the convenience and the safety aspect of it. But I don't know it well enough that, you know, that can be distracting too, even when you have those newer cars and you've got dashboard that's so fancy in front of you and you're kind of going, huh?
Oh, exactly. And again, hands-free does not mean distraction-free. And everybody has to find out, you know, where their comfort level is and have some familiarity with those in-car systems. Because, yes, there is an exemption for some of those systems in the new law. But it kind of comes down to, just because you can doesn't always mean you should. And so we just want everybody to make sure. Here's the question, really. Everybody should ask them before they interact with any electronic device or anything that's going to distract you, is what I'm about to engage in that important right at this minute that I need to take my concentration and my focus away from the driving task? Is it that important that I need to do this right now?
Right. And that's the thing. And I think unfortunately we're so used to it. I also think that they're going to try, and aren't they beefing up the driver's ed portion for young people?
There's a couple of provisions that have been proposed to make their way through the legislative process that will include the requirements for expanded distraction training in driver's ed. And, you know, that's a good idea. We do have a couple of modules that we do make available to driver's ed instructors that they can incorporate into their training. And so, you know, we've already laid the foundation for that. And then building on that, we're in the midst of building a very large, statewide, robust public education campaign that we're going to roll out prior to the law going into effect to, again, bring attention to it and help people understand what their options are. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, your car, you can sync your phone with. I drive a 2007 Jeep, so that is not an option with
there
that
you go.
Model year. So,
All right, Mike, I
have to find my own option for that.
All right. Well, Mike Hansen, thank you so much for joining us, Director of Office of Traffic Safety at the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. We certainly appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Esme. You really help us get this word out, and anything we can do, folks can contact us directly or go to that handsfreemn.org website.
Great. Thank you so much. It is 6:37. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. I want to invite you to tune in to WCCO-TV Sunday morning, 6 a.m., 10:30 a.m. I'll be there live. So will Mike Augustinek with all the weather. At 10:30 a.m., our live guests are Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. And also we will have Marsh Halberg, who's a criminal defense attorney who has been sitting in on the Mohamed Noor trial. He, of course, is accused of murdering Justine Ruschick-Damon. And we will have his analysis. That case will go to the jury on Monday. So a lot going in. Please tune in, WCCO-TV, Sunday, 10:30 a.m. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Esme Murphy. Well, listen, this half hour here on News Radio 830, Talk Radio 830, we are going to be talking with Dr. Elizabeth Farhat, who's a dermatologist with Allina Health Clinic, about skin cancer, what you need to know. Dr. Farhat is joining us right now. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you, first of all, you know, we tend to focus more on the summer, but can you get harmful rays in the spring and winter as well?
Definitely. You can get sun damage throughout the year. I always talk about in the winter, we get that reflection off of the snow, so it amplifies the sun UV rays. But also in the springtime, often people forget to put sunscreen on when it's in the 50s and 60s, these early spring days that are so sunny. You can get a lot of sun damage on those cool but sunny days.
Okay. And while, you know, obviously we do have a diverse population here in our upper Midwest region. We also have a lot of people of German and Scandinavian descent who have fair complexions, or Irish descent like myself, who are very fair. My poor child has both German and Irish, and she's extremely fair. Are we more vulnerable if we have that whiter skin?
Definitely. So people with lighter, pale skin or freckly skin have less natural protection from the sun and are more likely to burn. And that burning and is actual UV damage to the DNA that's in your skin. And so those are the people that absolutely need to get the sunscreen on and sun protection, even in the spring and winter.
But conversely, people of color, even people who are, and obviously there's a range of people from very dark-skinned African-Americans to, you know, people who are lighter-skinned African-Americans to people who are Asian and more olive-complected, they can still get skin cancer, can't they?
They can, and I have seen all different ethnicities develop both melanoma and non-melanoma skin cancer. So just because you have darker skin, I still recommend protecting yourself from the sun. Often people with darker skin don't use sunscreen because they aren't getting burnt, but then they end up with more cumulative sun damage because they've gone out without that sunscreen versus the fair-skinned people. You know, as soon as they get a sunburn, they're going to start protecting themselves. So I often see people with those darker tan skins ending up with even more sun damage because they haven't needed to protect themselves as much as the fair-skinned people.
So even if you're somebody who does not burn very easily at all, and you have darker skin, you can still get skin cancer.
Correct. So any time that your skin gets tan or darker, that is DNA damage. So people of any ethnicities can get skin cancer. I've seen it in all different ethnicities.
All right. And you talked about melanoma and non-melanoma. Explain the difference.
So melanoma is typically one of the dark spots that ends up either popping up or starting out as a mole that's changed. And it's usually a dark spot that's darker than your other spots. We talk about the ABCs of melanoma. A is for asymmetry, which means one side doesn't look like the other. B is for irregular border. C is for the color, so really dark color or multiple colors. D is for the diameter greater than a pencil eraser or 6 millimeters. And E is for evolution, so changing, bleeding, or growing. And then non-melanoma skin cancer is those basal cells and squamous cells. Those are those sores that just don't heal over. So if you've got a spot that just keeps scabbing over, if you have anything that's really itchy or painful, that can be a warning sign for a non-melanoma skin cancer. But often they'll just be a little bump that'll pop up and not go away. So some people tell me they had a bug bite that never healed over or an acne bump that never went away. That's always a warning sign to me.
Oh, so you may think, hey, I've got a bug bite, or I've got, you know, this is just a pimple or something like that.
And exactly. Yeah,
right.
But it's normally a bug bite would go away after a few months, or a pimple would go away. So these are those persistent areas that just don't heal over.
Right. And how quickly did these pop up?
So they can, they really can pop up within a matter of months. I have patients that I'll see for a skin check, and then, 3 months later, they'll notice a new spot pop up. They say that 1/3 of melanomas develop in existing moles and 2/3 are new spots that pop up. So often I'll have patients that say they've had the mole forever and then it just changed. So that's always concerning. Even a mole that you've had for years and years and years, if it just starts to look different, that's always a warning sign to me.
Oh, okay. Because, there are a lot of people who have moles and are born with moles. And
exactly.
If that can, suddenly change, then that's a warning sign. When is it, I know many people who've had them removed and, things have been fine and they go around with a bandage on their nose or, on their side of their cheek or their ear and everything is fine. But I also have known people who have gotten skin cancer where it has been shockingly aggressive and turned fatal. And it's... Unless you've seen it, I think it was really scary and horrible and just heartbreaking. I mean, it was so aggressive. Things got so big. The tumors got so big. It was just horrible. How often does it become that kind of an aggressive cancer, or are those two separate things? Help me walk through that.
So it all depends on the stage of the, that's typically going to be a melanoma, and it depends on the stage of the melanoma. So the really great news is that if it's caught early, so like a stage 1A melanoma, the 5-year survival rate is 98%. But if you're caught in stage for melanoma when they first catch it, which is that metastatic melanoma, the 5-year survival rate drops down to 20%. So that's why we're really encouraging people to get screened and to catch things really early, because they're very easy to treat if we can catch them early.
Let me ask you this. Is the stage 4 melanoma, is that a huge spot, or can it be just one of those little small ones too?
So it could be a small spot, because the way that it travels, it actually travels from the skin internally, and it travels through your lymph node system. So similar to breast cancer, the lymph node system drains your body, and it would just travel into that lymph node system and then throughout your body.
Okay. So it doesn't necessarily, I mean, just because you have a tiny little spot that's maybe irregular, that could be really one of the bad ones.
It could be, but typically if it's a really small spot, we typically are able to just take care of it with surgery.
Okay. And is it something that runs in families?
Yes. So melanoma definitely can run in families. So if you have a first degree relative with melanoma, I always recommend getting your skin checked. So that would be a mother, father, or a sibling.
Okay. And what are some of the warning signs that you might have a more aggressive form of melanoma?
So the warning signs would be things that are bleeding. So anytime something's bleeding, that's always very concerning to me. If you notice any swellings around the area, especially in those lymph node areas, that would also be a warning that it's spread further than just into the skin.
Got it. In terms of the treatment of skin cancer, how are we doing there? Obviously, we know about prevention and, sunscreens, that kind of thing. But how are we doing when it comes to treatment?
Well, I think it's a very exciting time for skin cancer, because there are so many treatment options out there. Early stage skin cancer can be either treated with surgery, so Evogen. We have Mohs surgery available for skin cancers, non-melanoma skin cancers on the face. And that's where they sample small pieces of skin and they test it while you wait so that they know they get all the skin cancer out. And then after that, there's a lot of different new treatment options for that metastatic melanoma that we talked about. There's a lot of new medications that work on the immune system just to boost up the immune system to help get rid of that melanoma.
All right, listen, we're chatting with Dr. Elizabeth Farhat. She's a dermatologist at Allina Health Clinic. We have to take a quick break, Dr. Farhat, but when we come back, I'd like to ask you more specifically about sunscreens, because this time of year, it seems like every shelf at Target is piled with sunscreens, and you're kind of looking at them going, what should I do? What should I put on my children? What should I put on my baby? What should I put on, myself? So we'll be back with Dr. Elizabeth Farhat after this on News Talk 830. This is 6:49 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy chatting with Dr. Elizabeth Farhat. She's a dermatologist at the Allina Health Clinic. We're talking about skin cancer. And Dr. Farhat, I should get to something a little bit more basic here. I was chatting with our producer, Devin, in the break here, and he was talking about a friend of his brother who passed away from skin cancer. And he was saying he didn't realize people could pass away from skin cancer, and it can be deadly. That's why we're talking about this. I mean, do people sometimes not understand how serious it can be?
I do agree. I think people think, oh, it's just on the skin, but definitely I think it's like 8,000 people die from melanoma a year, so it's a very deadly disease.
Right, and as I said, my relative, the tumors were just enormous in the advanced stages. I mean, they spread very, very quickly. It was really just horrifying to see. Let me ask you, help us out here with sunscreen, because we go to Target and maybe we've got, we're shopping for ourselves, or maybe we've got, the husband's playing golf, so you want him to get some. You've got a child, a baby, an infant, or a grandchild, or you've got some kids that are going swimming. Help us out with sunscreen, because there are so many products out there, and then there are so many SPFs. What should we be looking for, and how often should we apply in critical situations? Let's say a small child at a pool, and maybe somebody playing around a golf who's not wearing a hat. Help us out there.
Sure. So I always recommend sunscreen SPF 30 or higher.
30 or
higher. That's that sun protection factor. And then make sure it's broad spectrum, which means it has UVA and UVB coverage. And then also that it's water resistant. So even obviously when you're swimming, but even when you're just out and sweating, it won't wear off. And you do need to reapply every 1 to 2 hours, which is pretty frequent when you're out and about, but it definitely wears off. They did have a recent study that showed that even higher SPF is better when you use it. So it may be worthwhile to invest in SPF 50 or 100 if you are able to. And then the main thing I recommend is just getting it on your kids. There was a recent study that showed that if you apply sunscreen to your children, it can reduce the risk of melanoma by 40% in young adults.
Wow. Okay. And this is something, I mean, isn't it true that the damage you get as a child can kind of creep up on you later in middle age and old age, which is sort of a depressing thought.
Yeah, so it's cumulative. So all of that sun adds up over time. The sunburns you had as a child and teenager do cause issues as you get older, and that sun damage does surface as your body is unable to repair that DNA damage.
Okay, and I'm just, you know, I'm old enough to remember, it wasn't quite my era, but it was. I remember teenagers when I was a little kid slathering themselves with baby oil and sitting in one of those, I don't even know if they exist anymore, but they're like aluminum foil, like
yes,
a trifold thing. And it was just,
yep.
Oh my gosh. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, they were so cool and I wanted to be like them. And then of course I'm somebody who is very, very fair skinned. And so I'm not a tanner at all. And, you know, so I just was never able to do that, thank goodness. But I remember thinking, oh, those people were so cool. And now I kind of wonder where they are and how they're doing. And then, of course, there were people, you know, of my stepfather and mother's generation who didn't, you know, went golfing for hours or spent, you know, hours gardening and didn't wear, you know, hats or protection. And that's another thing. A hat can help, too.
Yes, I love sun protective clothing. So there's hats and then there's those UPF clothing. So sun shirts, swim guards, rash guards that are really great just to wear because then you don't have to reapply it when you're wearing that sun protective clothing and those wide brim hats.
Right. And then very soon, you know, obviously we've got the fishing openers. And I think a lot of people, it's deceptive here in Minnesota because especially in the spring, it can be sunny out, but it's cooler. So you don't really think about the sun's rays coming down. But just if it's like 50 or 60, it could still be just as strong, right?
Definitely. I've gotten people come into clinic with sunburns just from the spring sun.
Right. And with the fishing opener coming up. So I want to go over that again. So 30 or higher, and then look for, is broad spectrum, I feel like I've seen that on the label. Is that?
Yes, it would be on the label.
So 30 or higher, broad spectrum, and then you said water resistant?
Correct.
Water resistant. Okay. So in other words, if you're sweating or whatever, but even so, you should apply it every
1 to 2 hours.
1 to 2 hours. And yeah. I would think especially, you know, if somebody's swimming or for children, that would be especially important. Well, listen, these are all really, really good precautions because obviously the season is coming up. And for those of us who are fair, you got to You're going to get it more.
Yeah, but protected, yeah. And I just wanted to give a shout out. May 6th is Melanoma Monday. So there are free skin cancer screenings all over the state. You can Google it, look it up. We have ours at Allina Health.
Oh, wow.
And if people want to call for an appointment, I have the phone number. It's 651-241-9776. And so you do need an appointment, but they are free skin cancer screenings. So if we've scared you from this interview, you can get it checked out.
Okay, so that number is 651-241-9776. And then is there a website as well?
There's not a website, but if you, the different clinics that have it do have the information on the website. But if you call the number, they'll get you scheduled and get you screened.
All right. 651-241-9776. Thank you so much. We certainly appreciate your insights and great advice. Great advice about skincare and also, you know, what kinds of sunscreen to use. And then also, yes, the fair skinned people are in trouble, but you folks who have that wonderful dark skin, you're at risk too. So don't think you're immune. All right. Well, thank you so much. We certainly appreciate your expertise.
Thank you. My pleasure. Bye-bye.
All right, folks. All right. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. Coming up in our next hour, we're going to talk with some addiction specialists about addiction to alcohol and when you should know when you're in trouble, what kinds of resources are out there for both men and women. and what you should basically know. And then also coming up at 7:35, we're going to talk about with an expert about community-supported agriculture. Do you know what that is? It's pretty cool. I haven't done it for a few years, but it's those farms that allow you to have a share of the farm or a share of the proceeds for a price. You pay them for the work, and then you get kind of the bounty. And it's really taken off, and it includes flowers and produce and even some meats and different kinds of things, honeys. It's really gotten kind of a big situation. And then at 8 o'clock, we're going to chat with Professor Stephen Scheer of Carleton College about this week in politics. Obviously, a lot going on with the entrance of Joe Biden into the presidential race. And again, I do want to invite you to tune in to WCCO TV Sunday morning, 6 a.m., 10:30 a.m., 6 a.m., Mike Augustinak and I will be there. We'll have the full news, weather. And at 10:30 a.m., I'll have two live guests. One will be Representative Ilhan Omar from Minneapolis. And also, we'll have Marsh Hallberg, who's a criminal defense attorney. He is going to break down the latest on the Mohamed Noor trial, who is accused of killing Justine Ruschek Damon. Keep it here. News Talk 830.